Welcome to the Fat Easy Muskie Podcast. I'm Andy. Joined on the phone, I have Todd. Hi, Todd.
I hear. Shoot him in the leg, boys. Shoot him in the leg.
And we have Hans Mann. How are you, Hans?
Hello.
I'm great.
Just great?
I'm great. Oh, yeah. Great's about as great as good as it gets. Great?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Not fantastic?
How about you? Are you great or fantastic? That's a whole other level.
I am going to go with living the dream.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yep.
Anyways, so Hans, we've got a something that's going to be happening here in a couple days. Where you're going to be heading somewhere, aren't you?
Yeah, we're heading up to Toronto for the Muskies Odyssey.
Okay.
Which is a wonderful show.
All right. You're going to be man, the Odyssey's different in that it's still a one-day show, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that was where, I mean, you know, from doing the shows, I mean, we've been doing the shows for Red October for a long time now. I mean, and, you know, they're the one show that we always turn back and we say, why are we doing a three-day show? Because, you know, Sundays are very rarely very busy and, you know,
Fridays at 2 p.m. are not very busy either.
Right. So, you know, it's one of those things where they kind of proved the fact that if you make a musky show at a certain time, it don't matter how long it is, people are going to show up and get what they want to get, you know. So it's a great show. It's a great show. It always has been. And I mean, they do a great job running it up there. I mean, right now, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a promoter be so involved as Ryan Pickering has been up there. I mean, just promoting it and taking care of the vendors and making it a very, very cool event. So we're looking forward to it.
Okay. So
and we're going to have a new rod holder on the market.
A new one?
Are you serious?
A new rod holder. Yep. Okay.
You want to tell me about this new? Is this a Hans Mann? Is this a Carver? Is this a Red October?
No. This is a Fat AZ. They're sweeping the nation.
I've never heard of them.
I'm
like
obviously
out of China?
Being right. I'm loading on the sarcasm, but obviously, you know, we will have a bunch of Fat AZ rod holders up there, which are like, you know, hot commodity.
Well, for up there, it is. I mean, we've been pushing it when we have the show. I've been doing a couple posts. I'm trying to keep it to where, you know, you guys just take them up there and they just they get sown like seeds and then they're gone and then we don't have to worry about them.
Yes, I have a feeling that they're going to get gobbled up very quickly by our Canadian brothers.
Andy doesn't have to travel the border, but hey, Hans, real quick, is this an annual show now? I know for a while they were doing
it. For a long time it was every other year, but now it is every year.
It's every year, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that for sure because I don't keep up on it.
It's been happening every year. I mean, you know, there's a little bit better, you know, it kind of reminds me of the old school shows where there was a lot, you know, there seems to be, you know, there's people out there in tents waiting to be first in the morning. You know what I mean? Like, that's the other thing that the one-day show does. Like, you don't have three openings to run in there. It's now or never, and people get in there and get their stuff. You know what I mean? So there's a little bit of excitement about, you know, you're going to have a real busy day, and you got to be prepared for it. That's the one thing. You roll into the Odyssey, you better be prepared. You know, you better have your ducks in a row. There's no, you know, feeling it out on Friday at 2 and slowly immersing yourself into the show. This is something where they open those doors and it's like, you know.
The troop transport door opens and you storm the beach.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
And they have moved it around a little bit, I know. I think they do that on purpose also, like sometimes west of Toronto on the Buffalo side, sometimes on the other side, sometimes on the other side of Toronto.
Yeah, like last year was a lot further for us, so this year we're happy because it's only, I mean, I think it's only an hour and a half away from the Red October shop.
That's nice.
So, yeah, it's not going to be as long of a haul. So that's the other thing that's great for us is, I mean, on when it's done on Saturday, we can, you know, be home and
pack up,
have dinner with the family and get on with life again, you know?
Yeah.
So less of a time dump, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a great show. I mean, obviously Red October has been really going full bore this year. I mean, Mark is probably, I mean, I don't know numbers or anything, but he has to have sold far more tubes than he ever has before this season. And,
like 4 million, 5, 6
I, that,
trillion?
The figures are probably, you know, up into the mid billions.
Okay.
But, I'm unsure.
Yeah. I mean, when you start having that many zeros, what does it matter?
Right. Right. I mean, after 4 zeros, I'm kind of just like, no, that'll do.
Yeah. That's my lifetime too.
But no, it's been a great show season, but I mean, this is always a very fun one to end on, because it's got a lot of good spirit. So it'll be fun for sure.
Now, you're going to be having some stuff up there, some stuff that you've been working on in the last year or two. Last time I think we had you on, you were telling us how you carved fish out of wood.
Yeah.
What have you done since then?
Well, the life of Hans the Carver is constantly morphing and changing. I can tell you that. Since then, I don't know how long ago that was that we were talking, but I mean, I believe I was already guiding at that point, right?
Oh boy,
I can't remember.
I can't.
But I'm a full time guide. I'm a multi species guy. However, I've always been a musky guy at heart from the beginning. So I mean, I'll, you know, November and I fish the St. Lawrence a lot for muskies and stuff like that. So do a lot in the Buffalo Harbor. But for a while there, one of my main sources I was carving fish for a living, you know, carving replica fish, which I'm still carving them, just very slowly. I'm doing like one a year, and I have quite the backlog of carvings to do. So it's kind of a tough situation. It's not.
Are we bleeding into the decades right now for the weight?
Yeah. Yeah, probably. I mean, I think I have 16 people waiting.
Oh my gosh.
And I mean, I'm doing one a year.
Your newborn's going to graduate high school.
Those aren't all muskies. I can do two. Yeah, it's not a, when it all came down to it, you know, I love carving those, but like those are for, you know, people who have a month to sit and stare at a piece of wood and turn it into something. Whereas, you know, I don't have enough reserves to make it a month. So, you know, I got to do trips. I got to make baits, which in reality, I love bait making. From the early days of Red October to, I mean, I've been making wood crank baits for years, you know, way back, made them. And I had sold them at shows and stuff like that, just here and there, didn't market it or anything like that. But I mean, now, I got a couple wood baits a couple years back that were really starting to do well for me. And, you know, I knew they were winners. And, basically that was something where we then, carving them out of wood was very cool and a very nice collector's piece or whatever. However, I just like doing things. I like working on making things more efficient and, you know, making a more resilient lure, making everything a little bit better. And that's really what these carvers have become, you know, and now they're not wood at all. You know, they're made out of a high density foam and, you know, they're pretty cool.
So I think when you were on last, you had, I could be off by a year, but you carved that one walleye crankbait.
Yep.
I remember that was that like kind of like the, I remember seeing, I think, is it the Musky Max or something?
I would bring stuff around when I had it, you know, before it got sold or
like the walleye whatever, crankbait, but like the walleye shaped musky crankbait, not a crankbait for walleye. I should clarify.
Yes.
That.
Yes. Yes. It was I believe it was a 15 inch carved walleye,
I remember.
Because I made a couple of those that were all similar. I think I made 6 or 7 of them. And, yes, that was a nice little thing for a while. I mean, those would be, I mean, I was basically carving a lure just like I would carve one of my, you know, fish carvings. Mm-hmm. And getting very detailed and taking forever. And, you know, when you spend as much time on it as I did, it wasn't like it was a good, a good way of making money. That's for sure.
You were probably around below minimum wage.
Oh, yes. Yes. Sweatshop style, you know, not much profits.
Not paying the bills with that.
No. So, you know, and as I started guiding more, you know, I started, you know, that really cut down on my time that I had to carve these fish, you know, to carve the replicas. Mm-hmm. It also cut down on the time that I had to carve these, you know, my mindset kind of changed from trying to make artsy stuff to trying to make resilient tools that, you know, that I can make and are going to last me and that I can just go out and catch fish on, you know, and that's really what it has kind of become. I mean, you know, that's really how this all came about. And I mean, I'll be completely honest with you. I love making baits. You know, I love working on the actions. I love working on the prototypes. I love working on that, which is still woodworking and still fun. However, after I figure that all out, it's going straight to Andy Zomchik so he can make me mold.
Make you a mold for it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
I think that was a lot. Andy and I were talking there the other day when he said you were coming on, and I couldn't remember. I mean, I vaguely remember you being on, but I don't know if you were guiding back then. I mean, it's been a while. It's when we first met you.
At yeah. The
carving and stuff. But
yeah.
There's a lot happened with your guiding business. Now, I didn't hear or see a lot of things from this season, but I know every year's different, but I know last year
in the harbor was really tough. We hooked and lost one giant. Mm-hmm. And you know, that means nothing. So, you know, we caught, 15 or 16 fish in the harbor. A couple decent ones, but nothing gigantic. There were very few giant fish caught in the whole system. John Pencil got a nice one in the Niagara River. We were close, but the winds did not cooperate for us. We usually have big, huge, nasty winds all November. And instead of big gale force winds and then some calm weather, we were having like just sustained 15 to 20 mile per hour winds it was never enough to move things in. And the temperatures kept being weird, but, you know, we had a really good, year in the St. Lawrence. We got some nice fish up there. So that was kind of, that was good. I mean, we got a couple monsters up there, but you know, it's really one of those things where the harbor is a, you know, the harbor's tough fishing, man, but
yeah.
There are also fish there that are shaped like no other fish around. You know, I mean, and that's why we're, you know, that's why I keep doing it, is because it's one of those bucket list places where you can go, and if it's your day, you end up with the heaviest fish that you'll ever catch, you know? So it's kind of one of those things. I have to be very honest with everybody, and I have to tell them, you know, I'm going to, you know, put our best foot forward, and we are going to spend a ton of time out in the cold. I put up the top and we spend our time, and you know, it, you know, sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. So it's, but I love doing it though. I love fishing it.
Oh yeah. But you're doing it the right way. I mean, these people, so I want to get back to the fish from two seasons ago, not last season, the season before, the 54 and three quarter.
Yeah. We had a one that was, you know, there was a bunch of strangeness with that whole, you know, it was a bad situation. So we did not get a weight on it or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, it was a 55 inch fish with a 30 inch girth. So, yeah. I mean, it was a absolute mega, like,
33, 34 pounds.
What was that?
33 or 34 pounds.
Yeah.
That's about it. You know, that's why everybody overestimates so much, you know, it was probably 35. No, it was a big one. I mean, it was a, you know, it was, I don't even like talking about the weight because no matter what I say, some wiener is going to come telling me that I'm an idiot or something. So everybody can just figure that out for themselves. There's charts. There's all those things. You go think what you want. I could care less.
Okay. Yeah. So if I had a gun to your head and I asked you, guess the weight. And you have to be within a pound. And if you're wrong, the trigger gets pulled.
I'd say pull the trigger, bitch.
You won't even throw a guess out.
End it, yeah.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, I don't. You know, it was a good fish. I'd say it was in the upper 50s.
Yeah, everybody has seen that fish, I'm sure. It's paying attention to the podcast. It got around and I wanted to go sort of where Andy was, like, just, you know, was it 50? Was it mid?
No, because I weighed another one that was 49. The like a couple weeks later, we got a 53.5 by 27 that weighed 49 pounds.
Yeah.
Which I. Like, that was a gigantic one, and that one we weighted in the net and subtracted the net, you know. And it wasn't perfect, but, I mean, you know, it was close. Yeah. And, you know, that one, this other fish blew that one away. So, yeah. And like I said, it really doesn't matter to me that much. It seems to matter a lot more to a lot of other people. I mean, it was the best fish I've ever caught. And I say I caught it, but I didn't. I mean, it was caught by Dan King, who's a good friend of mine and a guy that I fish with a lot. And I mean, it's his fish, you know. And it was the biggest fish that I've seen anywhere. Not the longest. We've caught a bunch of longer ones up in the St. Lawrence.
Yeah.
But I mean, when it comes to just you know, a mid 50s fish that was built the way it was, I mean, it was an incredible fish. And that's where it ends, you know.
I'm very impressed with the way that you go about your business. Like, the reality of your business is that, I mean, I've fished with many guys that have gone with you. And just like you said, I mean, you tell them, are you sure you want to do this? You want to go there?
Oh, yeah.
And you want to go do this? And, you know, chances are.
Yep.
Are very slim. But.
Right.
You're telling me there's a chance.
That's what people are into. And it being in the industry as long as I have, the stories you hear, we catch those every day, blah, 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 you know. And
yeah, right. Tell me where that is. Tell me where that happens. You know what I mean? Like, they, you know, it all depends on how much you value that upper echelon giant tubby fish. You know what I mean? Like, if that's something, like, I mean, you know, one of the most, you know, a lot of the people that come are people that have been fishing St. Clair,
yeah,
and they've already caught 20, 50 inchers.
Yes.
And even a 53.5, mm-hmm, and even a huge one, you know, a 40 pounder or something like that. But I mean, you can keep doing that for a long time and that's all you're going to get. And not that there's not bigger than that in that lake. So don't, you know, I mean, obviously there's yep, giants in there too. The thing is, They're, you know, the one thing that we got going for us in the Buffalo Arbor is that it, when a rod does go off, you have a very good, I mean, 2 years ago, we got, you know, we got four fish over 40 pounds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, four world-class fish, and one of them was pushing upper echelon, you know, big time. So, like, I mean, that, and we had a lot better setup over and over again that year, you know what I mean? And that will happen again. Like, last year is about as bad as it could be. And I'll tell you this, I mean, we generally get a 50 pounder out of that harbor every year. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, you're not catching a lot. I shouldn't say every year. Like, somebody's getting a good one out of there. I tend to spend the most time in there, so a lot of times it's me. But I mean, throughout the years, we've stacked up a nice little laundry list of big, giant, fat, tubby fish, you know? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that we go on this trip. The one thing that people like about it is that this is not a, you know, let's meet at 8 and we're done at 3. This is a, we're going to do whatever it takes and fish whenever we need to. Like, if that harbor's clear, we're fishing all night.
Yeah.
I do not have rules other than we are trying to catch fish. And that's the other thing I tell people. I'm like, I want to catch them just as bad as you. And if you come and you restrict what I want to do, I don't really want you to come. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be able to go out there and spend my time when it makes the best sense. I mean, if there's stain to that water, I love the daytime. I love midday. You know what I mean? But, you know, if we're dealing with certain conditions, I want to be out there at night. I want to be out there during majors or minors. I mean, that is a time of year where my family knows, don't count on Dad for dinner, because who knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he might be home, he might not. We might see him tomorrow. Yeah.
Right. You never know. I might be 30 miles down the lake in three footers, you know, yeah. Crashing through crazy stuff trying to get back to the harbor walls. You know, like I will do whatever I feel is good, you know, and try to, you know, it, whether we get one or not, we're going to go on an adventure and we're going to go and we're going to, I mean, there's nobody that leaves feeling that we haven't done everything in our power to try and get one, you know?
Absolutely.
Where do you think those fish come from? Are they just chilling in the harbor, or are they going out in the middle of Lake Erie and just...
No, they're all, the big giants are all, you know, they're all pelagic, you know, pelagic open Lake Erie fish. And, I mean, there's a lot of places where, I mean, I've caught them out in the open lake in the middle of the summer, actually musky fishing, like way down lake, like way west.
Like me west or Sandusky west?
Yeah. No. Like even before you west, like west in New York.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So like those fish move along that shore, but the wind's got to be right. They do love that Canadian shore, which is, has a lot more, you know, a lot more structure. It seems like the prevailing winds and the currents drag a lot more bait over on that side. So, you know, there's fish out there. I mean, all summer long, Western New York is not a, you know, any destination for muskies. I mean, I do a couple jigging trips in the Niagara for muskies every year in the summer. I do some St. Lawrence trips in the summer, but when I'm home, I'm a walleye guy, you know, and I'll be out trolling a lot of times the open lake, like out in the middle of the lake, and all of a sudden I'll have a three color, which if you know anything about lead core, a three color is about, you know, 15 to 20 feet down with the bait. And I mean, all of a sudden, one of those little stick baits, you just watch your little board out there on a, you know, chintzy little walleye rod, just all of a sudden just go, you know, and you're in 90 feet of water. So obviously something bit it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you put any pressure on it at all, pop, it's gone. You know what I mean? Because you got, you know, 15-pound fluoro on there or mono or something, and it just pops it. And, I mean, that happens to me a couple times a year, you know?
Right.
Where something weird like that happens. And, I mean, I'm out there every single day. So, I mean, I put in a lot of time to get that. But they're out there, and they're out there eating. The thing is Lake Erie is a 6.4 billion-acre lake.
Yeah.
Million, I think. I said I like those billions, but I think it's million. But it's the thing is I mean, look at, like, Chautauqua was a big lake. What's it, 13,000?
Yeah, 13,000.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just a, you know, you can't even fathom what Lake Erie is. It's so big. Even if there were thousands of muskies, when you spread that out into that open abyss in the summertime, where they're just looking for cooler water, there's a lot of it. There's a whole ring of that flavor water going around the whole Eastern Basin, and they're just spread throughout that. And I mean, then you mix with the muskies, you know, short eating windows and everything that it is, and they become this elusive beast. And I mean, that's where, like, you know, I go through, I have, so since I've been young, I mean, a young boy, you know, I've gone through all the pictures of, you know, all the fish caught in the harbor in the 90s, you know, going through all these things. I mean, you see these fish, and you see the fish that have been caught recently. I mean, that big giant fish that we caught, we've never seen that fish.
No.
There's a good chance that thing, I mean, it had a couple of lamprey marks on it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, the thing was clean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that big hoe had been out there just bobbling around, eaten stuff for years without getting screwed with.
Well, that's going to change with all this forward-facing sonar.
Well, yeah, it'd be my guess. You know, it could. You never know. Like, I mean, you see, you know, half the big marks that you end up seeing, like I see big, huge marks all the time, and then I, you know, sometimes you're able to inspect it in some way or another, and it ends up being a big old sturgeon. You know, there's those out there. There's, you know, but that's the thing is that, and I actually love and relish the idea of it being as hard as it is. However, I also love and relish the idea of there being true megas in there, you know? So I don't ever feel like I'm wasting my time because that's what I'm there for, you know? So, you know, I do a lot of fishing in the lake, and there's areas that, you know, that seem to be better at other points of the year, but I don't, you know, I'm not going to talk about that too much. People can figure that out on their own.
So let me ask you this. So, you know, I like Lake Erie fishing, but
yeah.
One thing that I really like, even though it happens kind of infrequent, have you got any crazy catches? Like, I mean, you're going out for smallmouth and you pull up a 28-inch walleye. That's not a surprise. You pull
no,
up
that
a,
happens all the time.
Right. You pull up a paddlefish and you're like, where did this come from?
Yes, I know that happens on Lake Chautauqua sometimes, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah.
There's like a small amount of paddlefish in there?
Oh, yeah. Yep, I've seen
that. That's crazy.
Have you got anything weird? I've seen out of Erie, the city.
I get a bunch. I've landed a bunch of sturgeon.
I was going to say,
like
they've
got
sturgeon.
Gigantic sturgeon. Yeah, and we, you know, you're not even supposed to possess them. So, like, we always, they're spawning very heavily in the spring. And, you know, there are a ton of sturgeon. Like, people don't think that there's a lot of them, but, I mean, I probably snag 10 of them a year. More than that, probably. You know what I mean? And you, they're jumping all around. Like, you see these giant – I had a lady one time. We were sitting there. It was dead calm, hot. You know, it was a hot May day, and it was pre-spawn bass, and we're sitting there. And it's, like, dead calm where the boat's barely moving. And they're, you know, the one lady just sitting there, like, dragging something on the bottom. We're slowly drifting. And this giant sturgeon right in front of her, she's sitting in a chair in the boat just looking out at the rod, and it jumps right in front of her, like just came straight up out of the water like that Norwal and Elf.
Okay. Yeah.
It just came straight up out of the water. Its tail never left the water, and it just went straight back in, like without even making a splash. And she looked at her husband, and she goes, "Oh, my gosh, was that a dolphin?"
It was a porpoise.
I was like, "It's not a dolphin, you idiot! That's salt water."
On Lake Erie,
yeah, there's a lot of sturgeon out there. So, you know, I say that's strange, but they're not really strange anymore. I mean, a lot of times I'll tell them, I'll be like, "Do you want to waste 2 hours trying to land this on 8-pound line, or do you want to break it off and keep bass fishing, or you know, what are you thinking?" You know,
I'll be as excited as you want to be.
Right, right. And then almost all of them are like, "Let's try and land it." And, you know, that ends up one or two ways. One way we hand land it next to the boat, and they get a video, and they get to touch it, and it feels like a shark, and it's cool, and blah, blah, blah. Or they fight it for 2 hours, and it breaks off, and no one ever gets to see it, and, you know, they just wasted 2 hours of their day. So, you know, it's one of those dangerous little choices, but you know, it's still fun. And, I mean, I'll tell you what eats those little tiny bass tubes is, muskies, you know, you'll be smallmouth fishing. And we tend to catch a couple muskies a year that grab little tiny 3-inch tubes, you know.
Do you get any pike?
What?
Do you get any northern pike?
Yeah, we got some pike around. Yeah, you get pike here and there. Depending on the spots here, and there's certain places that seem like they're more prevalent. I mean, right at the mouth of the Buffalo River, there seems to always be. We actually caught a 40-inch pike there this year, trolling for muskies.
That's a good pike.
Which is a pretty good pike for. It was the biggest one I've ever seen in the harbor. Yeah, we get those. I'm trying to think of. We actually a long time ago there was like a bunch of burbot showed up.
Okay.
Which we had never seen those, and they were my buddy Josh got one, and we would see them like on the bottom, like in the clear water, and be like, what are those? And, you know, we didn't even know what the heck they were. But yeah, there were burbot the one time. I mean, everyone, you know, Lake Erie is mostly warm water species, but I mean, every once in a while you'll catch a, you know, you'll get like a big old brown trout or you'll get a coho or a king or something, which is weird because there's, they don't, they're pretty much gone, you know? So, well, the, but
they, been
when it comes
browns.
To real weird stuff, there's not that. What was that?
PA, Pennsylvania's been stalking brown trout.
Oh, have they?
They have. Oh, I don't know how
long.
The,
I shouldn't have said brown trout because there are brown trout around on our end of the lake too, and there are small little – there are people that have been putting them in. But if they're putting them in there, obviously some of them are going to make it up by us. So that is not that strange. But when it comes to cohos and kings and stuff, you know, it's kind of weird. Or they made it from Lake Ontario up through the locks or something. You never know.
Yeah, and there's been there's some people catching pinks.
Yeah, the pinks we used to get into the pinks pretty heavily like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Every 4 years we would have a big run of pinks up 18 Mile Creek off of Erie. And I mean, I got a whole picture album full of little pinks, like with the huge hook jaw and the big hump on their back.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, we were catching those right in Western New York, you know? So yeah, they're around, but then they just kind of disappeared. But I know people still catch them here and there, you know? So yeah. Go ahead.
On that burbot topic, before we get too far past it, so at like Presque Isle Bay, there are people that set up on like, you know, the North and South Piers, what they call it, it's the channel, and they actively target them. I mean, I don't see a lot of photos every year, but, you know, people have stopped posting stuff. I didn't know if that's something that, like, people do in Buffalo. They have a steep drop-off, and they just post up in the worst weather imaginable, and they go for...
Hey, there's probably more people targeting burbot there than muskies.
Probably.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong there.
But... That's the thing about Lake Erie too, is there is very few people trying because it's hard.
Well, I mean, because they're going for the, you know, at certain times of year, they're going for trout salmon species. Then they're going for, then it switches over to smallmouth. Then it's, you know, smallmouth perch, and then it turns into walleye.
Yep. You basically just named my season. I mean, right now I'm doing perch, and the perch will turn into bass for the whole month of May, and then the walleye starts getting easy, and you know, people love their meat around these parts, so I do a lot of those. But the great thing is that I get to splice in a bunch of, you know, week-long St. Lawrence trips to break the monotony of the Walters, you know. So I still get to be involved in all that, along with I mean, this year, like, I'm taking my son out to St. Clair. We're gonna fish with the gentleman from Medicine Man out there, and we're gonna cast for 2 days.
That'll be fun.
Yes. So Willie's looking. He actually got his first 50 last year out on Lake St. Clair trolling, but this year we were like, if we're gonna come back, we want to go casting. You know, so we're gonna see if he can't get his first sizable casting muskie. You know. So yeah. He's just getting into it. So it's an exciting year. We got a bunch of things to look forward to.
That's right. And you also got a new boat this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, man, did I ever. Yeah, you know, I've been running a Warrior for the last couple of years, and, I mean, they are very good. For being smaller, you know, multi-species boats, the reason why I like them is they're real good out in the big nasty waters, you know what I mean, of Lake Erie. And I spend a lot of time out there in that open lake, so I need something that's going to not break my back and keep my people dry along with myself. And they do a very good job. And I just offered to the bigger one, the 238. And yeah, it's a great boat. And I, you know, it was one of those things I ended up getting it from North Dakota. So
I mean, that's
that
convenient.
Ended up being, it was not the most convenient.
It's
however,
not.
It was.
Oh, it's not. It's not the name of the marina. It's the actual state.
Yes, yes. Not only that, Minot, North Dakota, which is like the northwest corner, like we were damn well to the Rockies, you know? Yeah. So it was
we were seeing moose.
Yeah, we were. It was a very, I don't know. It almost felt arid out that way, like windy as can be, and everything was dusty.
It might have been quicker to drive through Canada to get up to there.
It wasn't. It wasn't, because we would have. We would have if it was. It was a little bit more of a loop. It made you go a little bit further out. So we did the whole, you know, up through Minnesota, you know, up through Wisconsin, up through Minnesota, up through. I took my son. So we did a, you know, father and son cross country adventure. But yeah, it was great. We ended up getting there and getting it back. Was hoping my truck would survive, you know, and it did. So all is well. Then I had to get a North Dakota boat registered in New York, which was not the easiest situation because North Dakota does not give titles, which just about blew the people's minds at the Auto Bureau.
Okay.
Yeah, they've literally, it almost shut them down. They were unable to process this. However, through a bunch of slow talking and grace, we were able to work it out.
So I had the same problem when I got my little Ranger from Minnesota. They had like this, and I'm anyone from Minnesota listening, and they're going to be screaming at me. It was a long time ago now, but there was like a forever trailer registration, and it was like you put this sticker on, and no one really cared. That's how it came across to me. And the state of PA is like, this ain't good, and I'm like, this is it. And they're like, well, how do we know? And I'm like, well, Google. And I had because to go to two or three notaries before one's like, oh, I already know how to do this. And it just boom, 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 boom. You find
that's the whole key with that, with these out-of-state purchases, is finding the savvy person that's been around for a long time at the DMV or the Auto Bureau or wherever you're going to get it registered or titled or whatever you got to do. You got to like, and it's hard now because they make all, you just get who, your number's called and you go to whoever's there. So you get little, some goofball that's been on the job for a year. They don't have any clue what they're doing, and they're trying to follow the rules, and they just stick it to you. You got to find somebody who's been around, you know. And
New York has probably never made many transfers from North Dakota.
Well, that is why I, you know, was not very upset. I understood that it was a trying situation. However, we got her done. We got her done. So, yep, it's all good, and we are rip-raring to go and ready for a season of crushing waves and getting skis and getting everything, you know? Banging fish all year. So as soon as this Odyssey's done, I am basically going hard from now till December 15th. So
that's a long time.
Yes, the calm before the storm. And then I will just be battered and sunburned.
That's kind of like Todd. Todd starts up next week, too.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Do you know who's not going to be fishing next week? This guy.
Andy. No. No. Andy Zomchik's just hanging out. Well, you got things you got to fab?
I've got a lot of things to do.
Yes.
I've got a enormous tool bench full of Project X's that are half built. So
yes, like an 11-inch crankbait that's just been, you know, sitting there for.
I mean, if only it could just like somehow digitize in my hands, right?
I know, I was kidding.
I knew exactly.
Only partially kidding. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking about that today. I'm like, I gotta get that one rolling. But I know that you know you've been sitting pretty good.
I am. The thanks to the molds that we have created, I am able to turn out some very perfect, very nice baits that are running beautifully. And you know how the bait making thing is, because you guys are both bait makers too. I mean, the more you do it, the just better you get at it. The little tricks and things that you learn, and
the fine really motor skills that require to wipe the epoxy just so.
Oh, yeah. That's what I've been doing for the last 3 days. I'm actually sitting down here in the Carver's Lair, is what I like to call it. It's really just, don't, if you hear a like crazy noise, it's just my dryer going off, seeing as it's 20 feet away from me.
Okay.
But, lots of clear coat. you know, I never realized how much time it took to clear coat 102 baits. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's a couple days worth of stuff.
Couple days. Yeah. I try to do the math real quick. If I'm cranking, I could do that in a very exhausting day. And I'm talking
I'm adding drying time also.
So am I.
Okay, yeah, see, mine doesn't dry that fast.
Well, I mean...
It also depends on how many coats you do. I mean, I do two coats.
Two coats.
I do three coats, one at the beginning, and then I paint, and then I do two coats on top of that.
Yeah, so mine are just the top coats. So if I hit, like, at 6 a.m., I'd be done by 7. By, like, 10, 11, I'll be putting the second coat on. I give it an hour, but it doesn't take me quite an hour. So then I go three or four more hours, do it again, three or four more hours, do it again. And like at 11, 10, 11 o'clock at night, I could do another coat, which would then do 40 baits single coat. But it's kind of like you could just say it's two coats.
Yes.
And it's just like, No, I don't like doing it. But in the winter, I can do 80 baits in a day. And it sucks because it's just like your hand is all rheumatoided and... the knuckles just don't work. So,
yeah, that's the thing is from handling each one of those baits with your hands, like your bait holding hand. Like I literally get cramps where mm-hmm. my hand is just like locked up in a certain position. Like at night, it will from handling, like holding them by the lip and painting that stuff on. Like that really does. it's amazing how. You add some numbers to the situation, all of a sudden it becomes quite the task.
Yeah, when you're doing like, what, 4 or 5 billion of them a year? You get weathered.
Right. Yeah, when you get into the big billions,
mm-hmm.
you know that you're really working hard.
That's how you know you've made it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Tell us about the new baits.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, I have my original, my most, you know, the what I would kind of call my flagship bait, which is the one that I've caught, you know, a lot of big fish on in my waters in the Northeast here, is the Deep Carver, which was the first one that you helped me get a mold made for. And basically, you know, that's a very deep, deep running, you know, 42 feet back is getting you, you know, close to 20 feet down, you know, 18, 19 feet down. So, I mean, it's a very steep dive curve bait, which, you know, whether it's for deep water or just for running a short line that stays, yeah, a down rod that stays out of the way and keeps that line away from everything else. I mean, it works very good for that too. But I mean, all the baits are, you know, they're molded over a through wire rig, which is just a big giant piece of, you know, 500 pound stainless steel wire that, you know, I have that weighted and it in the lip, and then the, you know, the high density foam just, you know, gets injected right around it. And so, I mean, they're pretty cool cause they're all through wire, and that foam, people hear the word foam and they think that it wouldn't be
packing peanuts
resilient. Yeah. It's not packing peanuts, and it's not wall insulation or boat insulation. I mean, that's 2 or 4 pound density. This is 18 pound density, you know? So it's, you can beat this stuff with a hammer and it won't even dent, you know? So it's pretty cool. I, for anybody that's looking to make baits out of it, have a good time because it ain't easy figuring it out. But
I
it
can
is a
attest
very,
to that.
Yes. Yes. It is not a nice, material to work with. It's very hydrophobic. It just repels water in all ways, which is, one of the things that I love about them is their closed cell foam, you know? So, I mean, they'll never take on water. It won't do what a wood bait will do to you. You know, if you wear into it, it gets waterlogged or whatever. So, you know, that's one of the things I like, because once I get one fire and I do not like having to pull that out of the spread, you know? But yeah, so now, I mean, I made a shallow version of that. So it's just the same exact body shape, except it has the smaller lip and it has a much gentler dive curve. And then we got the Big Larry, which, right now I'm still making with silicone molds. That was the one I was alluding to earlier.
I can tell you where one of them is sitting. It's at my desk.
Yes. 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 That's good, though. It's a good place for it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But those are a big shallow bait, which it seems like there's not many of those out there. But, I mean, this thing, you know, 50 feet back is only getting, you know, 10, 11 feet down. But it is a wandering bait. I mean, this thing jumps and jukes and jives all over the place, walking 3 feet in both directions, very stuttery, and, you know, it's just a crazy bait, you know. But it stays down, and you can go, you know, you can still go 5 miles an hour with it, and it stays there. So, I mean, it's probably one of my proudest creations so far is that one, just because I got it to do crazy stuff repetitively, you know. And not too crazy where it's blown out or anything like that. It just got a lot of good action to it. And then last but not least is the little shad. I got a 5.5-inch Carver shad, at Pittsburgh, I sold every single one of them. They're beautiful looking baits. The body shape is very nice. Nice, hard shaken little, another very shallow bait. It runs, you know, even shallower than the Larry does. So, I mean, it's made to stay up. It's a great weed edge crankbait, you know? So yeah, they're all running great. You know, I feel like my paint jobs are getting better. I do like my sparkles.
Who doesn't?
So I do a lot of sparkle baits, you know. They're very...
Painting the same, like, brushes and stuff that you were doing all your carvings with?
You know what I did is, I mean, for the carvings, I did a lot more detail stuff. Like, I was, you know, drawing pencil lines with an airbrush and, like, doing things like that. And, like, obviously for, you know, I'm not trying to show off my artistry with these baits, even though I still want them to be beautiful and pretty. I'm not trying to blow the doors down with what they are. I'm trying to make like true fish catching colors that are, you know, no nonsense, that, you know, are, you know, a bunch of the good old standbys. I mean, for the first time for this Canadian show, the Odyssey here, I made black perch, which, I mean, is one of my favorite colors. And for some reason, I had never painted a black perch because I make that tank charmer one, which is the one, which instead of it being like, the yellow and the orange belly with the black sides. And then I have one where I just do the whole body in gold scales. And that's what the tank charmer is. That's the one that we caught that giant on. So, like, I've always made that, and it's almost the same color. But, like, you know how it is. People want the...
Oh yeah,
the
yeah.
actual specific yeah. color. So I got my first run of black perches going out. I got some beautiful legend walleyes.
Yep.
So they're like the perch baits.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of different crazy stuff here. I mean, I get, you know, a bunch of Cisco looking stuff, bunch of shad looking stuff, some brown perch. You know. All the goodies.
So,
you know,
after the show,
yeah.
like after the show, do you have baits for sale, or you're just like, get them at the shows, see you later, I'm going fishing?
So here's the thing. I am, my production has come a long way, due to the presence of molds and whatnot. And, right now I have 102 baits, and they're coming with me to the Odyssey. So mm-hmm. if I have stuff left over, I will put them out there. However, in past years, I've stopped production after the shows and just waited till the next year. This year, production will be constant throughout the entire year. I'm not going to stop making them. And I'm also going to be making them available and purchasable on my website. So I'm in the midst of updating and redoing my Hans the Carver website, which there's going to be Carver crankbaits on there. And basically, I'm gonna be selling them through the website.
Good stuff.
So, yep. yes. So that's my big plan. But you know, that's all. You know, just like everything, there's five balls in the air right now. We'll see which one lands first. You know,
right.
But it'll all get done.
Well, good.
So, yeah, that's something where I want to get that done sooner than later, because once I get into the, you know, the heat of the summer, I mean, I am cooked, and I don't feel like doing anything when I get off the water every day, you know. So I'll be at my least productive then. However, I have been working with a bunch of people that have been helping me that are going to be helping me produce baits, you know. So it's not going to be, I mean, I'm still going to be painting all of them and clear coating all of them. However, the, you know, the pouring of the molds and everything like that is something that, you know, I mean, my parents are going to help me. My kids are going to help me. A couple of my good friends are helping me, you know? So, I mean, there's, you know, some people making a little bit of money making some carvers.
Straight
you know?
Up Henry Ford over there.
Oh, old school, baby. Ground up.
Yeah.
Started from the bottom. Now we're here.
That's right.
You know, either way.
So,
yeah, so it's all going great, and love these crankbaits and love making them. And I'm in it for the long haul with these bad boys. I'm going to be taking them all around the next couple of years, catching fish on them. So we'll see what happens.
Excellent. And yes. Tell them, I guess we didn't really do formal good introductions. I mean, hit up your social media or website or whatever. Let's get that out there.
Yeah, so, I mean, the place where I post most of my stuff on Facebook or Instagram is Hans the Carver. I do have a Buffalo Harbor Outfitters, which website and social media that's linked to that is, you know, just mostly about the charter service. But I do all of the stuff that comes off of my boat. All the fish that I get end up getting posted on Hans the Carver, along with Buffalo Harbor Outfitters usually. There is a Hans the Carver website, as I had mentioned. You know, if people want baits, I have no problem taking orders and making custom orders for people until I get the – I mean, I never will have a problem with that. However, once I have a website up, obviously we can just get them I mean, I'll be making them and putting them up on there where people can get them from. But until then, I mean, I can just get an email, you know, which is on my website or on my social media. It's hansthecarver1@gmail.com. I mean, you can hit me up with an email. I'll make you whatever you want.
Now, is the wait time on the baits longer or shorter than the wooden taxidermy?
Just a slight bit shorter.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. You'll be looking to get them within the next couple weeks opposed to decades.
Okay.
So, yes, the lures are – I am working – with every fiber of my being right now to get myself a production system that will allow me to make enough baits to meet the demands. You know, I mean, right now during show season, I've been, you know, just building to get through the shows, and the shows have been, you know, each show I've sold more at each show as each show went, no matter which show it was. Like, I've sold more at each show throughout the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's kind of growing right now, I think, because people are realizing that they are good baits to catch fish. And, you know, as this goes, I mean, if you're going to do this for real, you got to be able to make enough that you can support when people want them, you know? So I am, I'm in the midst of figuring that out right now, and I will. So within a year, it'll be, you know, there's always going to be problems. You know how it goes, but
there's always problems.
But no, everything's great. It's a very exciting time for me. You know, busy as can be with the guide service, and the baits are going well. So it's I've been blessed.
You work hard.
Yes.
Working hard too. You work hard. You're going to be at the Odyssey this Saturday.
Yep.
You're going to be in the Red October booth. You're going to have your own baits there. You're going to be peddling.
I'm going to have a bunch of slanted rod AZ or rod holders made by Fat AZ.
That's right. And I guess I might as well do an official thing on that as we're wrapping this one up.
Yep.
Red October booth. Find Hans. Mark will sell them to $340 Canadian. I had to get the exchange rate when I made that post a few weeks ago. Two slanted bases with Down East. That's only how they're available. You're going to get one box. We got to make this easy for everybody. One box, $340 Canadian. And it sure saves, I'm going to do a stupid joke here. It saves a boatload of money. shipping into Canada is ridiculous, especially on that much weight. So if you were thinking or whatever, this would be a great time to get them off of Hans and make everyone happy.
Yeah.
And so find them.
Yes.
You have been taking pre-orders, correct?
Yeah, we got a bunch of pre-orders. I wish I would have. There was a moment at the beginning where we weren't taking pre-orders, and when I made that first post, people were like, "Can I put myself down for them?" I was like, "Nope, you better run your ass to the booth first thing." So then, like, Mark was like, "I talked with Andy, and we're taking pre-orders." And I was like, "Oh no, hopefully we don't do 25 pre-orders."
Oh, you do like 30 pre-orders?
So, right, you know what I'm saying?
I know.
No, it's all good. It's I think they will be well received, and
the thing is, for anyone who is going to be at the Odyssey, we have no idea what the demand's going to be. So we just figured a safe number. It's nothing against anybody. They could come back with 24 of these boxes for all I know. But we could be minus 80 boxes. I'm not sure.
No, I have a feeling we're going to get rid of them.
So
I have. I'd like to see them go because I've been working on Andy for a long time. I would like to go up and do that show just because.
Well,
I want to see
until
that.
You guys decide to battle your way through the border, we'll be here for you.
Yeah, we appreciate that. It was great talking to you, Hans.
Yes. Yeah, it was great talking. Thank you for having me on. It was fun as always.
Well, you got to get ready. You're clear coat and doing laundry. Family stuff. I appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, no problem. Great talking, and we'll see you guys soon.
All right, I'll talk to you.
All right, bye.
Bye. All right, everyone. Hans the Carver, Todd Young, myself. We're getting near spring. Fishing season's right around the corner, so thanks for listening, and good luck fishing.